Hello, and welcome to the Planning Period Podcast, your Ed Break Room. I'm your host, Brad Schreffler. This week, I chat with Brent Coley, elementary school principal in Southern California, host of the Teacher Tales podcast, and just an all-around cool dude. As all my guests do, Brent answers my three questions, and the conversation kind of goes off from there. In this episode, we talk about educational funding and how the lack of it prevents the change that we all want to see in education, the power of Twitter, both for teachers and for students, and the importance of making students know that you care, among other things. Before we get to the episode, I have a quick announcement. I have set up a store to make gear for the podcast. If you're interested in getting a shirt, mug, sticker, or even phone case sporting the show logo, check out my store at bradschreffler.com/store. For now, sit back and enjoy episode 15, my interview with Brent Coley. All right. Hello and welcome to this episode of the Planning Period Podcast. I am joined today by Brent Coley. You know, I didn't even ask you how to say your name before I started. I'm hoping that's right.
You got it. I've been called many things, and that was perfect. Coley. See, yeah, I'm called Cooley, Collie, but Coley, you got it perfect. Yep.
It's that English background. I think about where a word probably comes from and take a shot that way.
There you go.
So, yeah, I'm joined by Brent Coley. We met through a Facebook podcast, educational podcasting group, and I thought he'd be a great person to have on the show. His podcast, the Teaching Tales podcast, lines up so awesome with that storytelling portion of what my show, especially my third question, kind of like we talked about before recording. But if you could, even though I did a little bit of it, give us a little introduction to you and tell us who you are.
All right. Well, first of all, looking forward to it. Thanks for having me on. And yeah, like you mentioned, my name is Brent Coley, and I am an elementary principal in Southern California, Murrieta to be specific. And for those not familiar with that, it's about 45 minutes north of San Diego. Before moving into administration, I'm getting ready to start year five as a principal. And I spent 2 years as an assistant principal at the middle school level before that. And in the classroom, I taught for 15 years, all at elementary teaching grades 4 and 5. And I love what I'm doing. I love ed tech as well. When I was in the classroom, I tried to integrate that as much as I could to engage students. So now in my current role, I try to support my teachers in doing that as well. So that's me in a nutshell.
Very cool. How do you, this is kind of a lame question, but I'm going to go with it anyways. How do you like being an administrator?
I like it a lot. I mean, some days, just like when you're in the classroom, some days are better than others. But I'm frequently asked the question, what you just asked is, do you like it? The answer is yes. I'm also asked, is it harder than being a teacher? And I don't know in any of your conversations with administrators, if you've ever asked them that question, and I'd be curious to say what their response would be. But my response is it's different. So is it hard? Yes. But being a classroom teacher is hard. There's a lot of differences with it in as far as, am I grading essays every night? No, I'm not. So in that sense, it's easier. But in the other sense of the word, the brain doesn't turn off. And at 2:30 in the morning, I'm laying in bed thinking about the things that I have to take care of or the email that I got from a parent or something like that. So to answer your question, I love it. It is a very difficult job. It's demanding, but so is being a teacher. It's different in very many ways. And I didn't realize how different until I actually sat in this seat.
Yeah. And you know, there's two parts I think of when I come up with that. First of all, the responsibility aspect. I mean, you are literally responsible for everything. It is all on you. And no matter what goes well or what goes wrong, you take all the blame for every part of the bad. You know, even when things go well, you blame the principal for the parts that weren't perfect.
Yeah.
So I think that's hard, but the other part of it you mentioned is just how different it is. And I've talked about this on another episode before, but I'm always so frustrated by the fact that you basically have to change professions in order to advance your career as a teacher. And that's so frustrating because there are different, and I'm, you know, there are plenty of people out there like you who like both, but I don't really want to be an administrator, but I want to advance. And then I'm stuck.
Yeah, well, it's funny because I never wanted to be an administrator either.
That's what every administrator says, I swear. They're neither did I. But
people used to ask me, you want to be a principal? It's like, are you crazy? No. I mean, I would have bet the farm. Never in my – there are two things I swore I'd never do. I said I'd never go to middle school and I'd never become an administrator.
And you literally became an administrator going to middle school.
Going to a middle school, yeah. I did them both at the same time. So I've learned never say never. And, it was something that I never sought out in terms of – I know some people it's kind of like, okay, they've got their long-term plan. I'm going to teach for X number of years, and then I'm going to move into an assistant principal, and then I'm going to be a principal after five more. I never had – that plan in my mind. I became a teacher because I wanted to be a teacher. And I, in my mind, it was, and I'm going to retire as a teacher. Now things, opportunities opened up for me and some of the leadership that I was fortunate to work under, they kind of nudged me in a certain direction. They saw things that I didn't necessarily see in myself. Long story short, here I am, but I hear what you're saying. It is you may want to move up and maybe whether that's a district position or something like that. Because I remember listening to one of your previous episodes. I don't recall the guest's name, but she was talking about some of her friends who went through the cohort when they were getting their admin credential. And she said only a couple of, I don't know if you remember this conversation, only a couple of them actually, they got the credential or their master's in admin, but only a few of them actually moved into an admin position.
Yeah, I think that was Nicole Mutters. I think it was her that said that.
Yeah, and I actually have very similar. I have friends that I went through the cohort with, and they now have their admin credentials and their master's, and after doing all that, they're kind of like, no, I'm good. I'm good staying where I am. But I hear what you're saying. It the opportunities oftentimes are fewer the higher up you go in the hierarchy of district.
Yeah. I agree. It is odd. I don't know. We have a weird profession in so many ways. And I feel like this podcast, I end up saying that a lot, but this is just such an odd profession. And I don't know if you have this experience, but so often when I describe things to people like my friends or people I'm just meeting and explain what education is like or what teaching is really like, or we get into a deeper conversation, I start to explain this stuff. They go, there's no way that's true. Like, you're making that up. That can't be real. And I hear that all the time as I tell stories about what we do to non-educators. And yet that is the reality of us, of our days, you know?
There is never a shortage of it's almost like you can't make this stuff up, but that is the reality. And the stuff that we deal with, I mean, my wife works in, she's not a teacher, but she's a social worker. So some of the things that she encounters as well, I mean, we got a lot of interesting stories to tell. So.
Well, and that leads us with a good transition right into talking a little bit about your podcast. You know, I really enjoy your podcast, like I already said, but can you give me a little idea like where that kind of came from? How did you get started on your podcast? Where's that from?
The podcast is called Teaching Tales, and the idea came out of kind of going back to what you were saying is, I mean, after being in, this is going to be my 22nd year in education, and I have a lot of stories to tell. And as I mentioned before we started recording, I have yet to meet someone who does not like a good story. When I'm at church and the pastor in his message breaks into a story to illustrate something, I find myself leaning forward. It's like, ooh, story. Because people remember stories. They help illustrate the concepts and the messages. So I thought, you know what? Let's go with that. I mean, I've got a lot of stories to tell, but what if I brought on a different guest each episode and just had that person share their story? So that's pretty much what we do. When we kind of have a theme for each episode where the one that I think that you were recently listening to was on kind of aha or game-changing moments. I had John Carrippo on, and we just kind of talked about those moments in our careers where we had a game-changer moment. I've had ones on where we talked about mistakes that we've made, where we've talked about the power of connection or the power of technology, just stories, because, again, I love listening to stories, and like I mentioned, the people that I know, they like listening to stories too, so let's tell our stories. I mean, it's kind of like a running joke with teachers that, we should write a book with all the stories. Well, I'm not writing a book, but kind of making the audio book, the audible version, so to speak. So, and the whole purpose is hopefully to encourage and inspire anyone listening. Kind of like, number one, you're not alone. If you're going through a tough time, maybe we're going to share a story about something similar. Or if you just need a pick-me-up, maybe somebody will share an inspirational story that'll just encourage that person. So that's the kind of backdrop.
Yeah, it is really cool. And I will encourage my audience for sure to go check out Teaching Tales podcast, because it really is, it is very cool for teachers. It feels, I don't know how much in terms of like professional development your podcast is, and neither is mine. Don't get me wrong. It's not an insult, but it's just it's a feel good kind of thing. Like, man, that's cool. Or wow, that's unexpected. Or just, wow, good for them. Like, I don't know. Just, I have a lot of feels as I listen to your podcast. So I will encourage my audience to go check it out.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, because that's exactly what I'm going for. it's not formal. I'm putting the air quotes, formal PD. But I think that PD in today's educational society with Twitter and everything, it isn't as formal as it used to be. And you can learn in so many different ways. And this is something that I just hope, if someone's driving to work in the morning on their commute, and like you said, they get the feels, or they just have a little spring in their step because somebody shared an encouraging story, then I have done my small part in helping the educational community. So that's the goal.
Cool. I'm curious, do your teachers listen to your podcast? Do they know about it, or do you kind of keep those lives separate?
No, they do. And I've actually, I'm trying to think how many, one of my episodes, my guests were two of my, actually episode 2 was one of my teachers. Episode, I want to say 14, was a couple of my teachers. We talked about flexible seating in episode 2. She shared her story in 14. We talked about homework. I know for certain that a few of them listen regularly, and I actually gave them a shout out in my most recent episode because, their stories and what they do just kind of worked out well. So, yeah, I don't keep that separate. I don't force it down their throats or anything, but it's like, hey, if you're interested, here you go. And some of them are interested, not everybody, but some. So, and that's cool.
Yeah, it's something for me because my podcast is fairly new, obviously, but I am in an instructional support role, and so I definitely have access to all teachers and could talk about it. But the problem I run into in my district, and I'm especially interested in you because of your, you know, your administrative role, but I've had issues in my district with my online thoughts being misrepresented or saying they're against the district message or things like that, to the point that I don't have any reference whatsoever to the school I work at, the district I work at, or anything of that nature. The closest I will say to anybody is that I work in Central Florida, because I've had issues in the past with legal and getting sent a cease and desist threatened to be fired for something I said. And none of it was controversial in any way. It was just, they didn't like it. It didn't go with what they wanted. It's interesting to me that your district and your leadership above you are okay with kind of what you're doing. I find that in heart encouraging.
Well, I actually, one of my guests was my superintendent. I went with him, just to him, and said, hey, and just kind of told him what I was looking to do, and just said, would you be interested in coming on? He was like, yeah. And he shared some great, it's actually one of my favorite episodes, because it was talking about how personal influences professional. He just kind of shared some personal stories, and I did as well. So yeah, I'm very blessed in that what I'm doing has been embraced and encouraged by my district leadership.
Man, that is awesome. You're very lucky. Yeah. So, all right, well, let's move right along here. I want to talk to you a little bit, and especially as an administrator and out in a different part of the country than me, I'm curious. So what is the biggest problem facing education right now?
Yeah, that's a good question, because there's a lot of different ways I think that that you could go to answer that question. And I would start by saying there is a whole lot of good going on in education. I think oftentimes it gets a bad rap, and oftentimes justifiably so. There are definitely things that need to be improved, but there's also some good stuff. Again, there's a lot of ways I could go, but one of the things that just popped into my mind is funding. I know, and I'm not sure how it is out in Florida, but California is one of the near the bottom in terms of funding for per pupil funding. And I just know that, like, with the shifts with Common Core and new instructional strategies and things that teachers are being asked to do differently. I mean, administrators are being asked, everybody is being asked to do things differently. And I know in some of your earlier episodes, you talked with your guests about professional development and the importance of that. And what I'm seeing is one of the concerns is we are asking teachers to do things differently, to teach differently, to stop being a sage on the stage and just lecture all the time, and to get kids engaged in collaborative conversations and things like that. And we need to be able to provide PD for that, rather than just saying to teachers, do it differently.
Well, does that make PD, sense? Yeah, it does. But that PD costs money, and
exactly.
We don't have it.
And we don't have it. And it's such a, again, we have some great, we call them lesson studies in my district. And I'm continuing to reference some of your earlier broadcasts, because as I was listening to that, I thought, oh yeah, we have that too. We call them lesson studies, where we've got some teachers on special assignment, which is what they're called in our district, essentially instructional coaches. And they have come out to our site and worked with grade levels, basically doing model lessons and then having time to debrief with the entire team, talk about what they saw and really break it down, and then have one of the teachers on the team go back in, and then the teacher teaches the lesson with the instructional coach there, and then again they debrief and they talk about it, and the response from that from our teachers has been so positive. And we're looking to continue to do that, but like you said, that costs money. Because if I've got four or five teachers on a grade level at my school, that's five subs for the day that need to be paid for. And I've got K-5 grade levels. I've got six grade levels. And there are 11 elementary schools in my district, 21 schools total. So, I mean, you can just start to do the math on that and how much money that costs just in subs. But it's just one of those – we're behind a rock and a hard place, between a rock and a hard place, because it's so necessary, but it costs money. And I'm not, and I mean, we could even take that down a different path just in terms of funding for technology. And the disparity or inequity in terms of funding when you compare different schools. And I don't know if it's like that in your area, but you're one to one, correct?
Yeah, we are. And we don't have quite as much of a disparity only because of our district structure. So our district is 20 high schools and work your way down from there. We're massive. So we, the way we break up districts down here, there's only like 20 of them in the entire state of Florida. So, they're all pretty big and we don't break them up within a given county. So it's all following county lines. And the plus side there is that the district is pretty easily able to allocate funds fairly equally. Now, when you start talking about state or state and federal funding, those are often based on score. So there are schools who maybe are very low performing schools and they might get extra money, or the highest performing schools get a little extra money. And so that middle kind of is a little less well off than the others. But most of those kinds of technology initiatives are done at the district level. So we don't quite have that disparity, but I know that is a common theme in education.
Yeah. And as far as, I'm speaking more along the lines of, because in the district, the equity is there as far as the district is concerned, but, like we're not one to one because I'm in a fairly high performing district. I'm at a Title I school, so I get some federal funding, but,
wouldn't be enough to make you one to one on your own. Yeah.
No, not anywhere close. And I remember, for the longest time, I've always asked myself, how are these districts able to go one to one? How can they afford to do this? Until I had a conversation with a friend who's a principal in a different district that is has a much higher percentage of socioeconomically disadvantaged students, so they get a lot more funding. Her general budget is about 10 times the size of mine.
Wow.
So it's like, well, there you go. That explains how they're able to. So it was almost, I mean, it was a little frustrating because it's like, wow, that's a bummer that there's amazing things going on at my school. But I think like, what, how much better would it be if we had access to some of those extra tools as well. And my community, we passed a bond measure, which, I mean, I live in an amazing community, and the city passed, it was a voter approved technology initiative. So that has provided additional funding for us. So we're able to get a lot more than we have had before. And again, I don't want to come off in any way like I'm complaining, although I guess I am a little bit, but I'm thankful. But I just think like, oftentimes there's the haves and the have nots. And like you said, it's the people in the middle oftentimes get the short end of the stick. And I don't know what the answer is to that, but I'm just thinking like, wow.
You talked a little bit about PD and like you've said, I this has been a focus of mine recently, but you talked about the lack of funds for a PD. I think in a lot of ways, that's why it has become the norm for teachers to go out on their own and get their professional development through things like Twitter and social media and podcasts and paying for ed camps, or not, I mean, ed camps free, but paying for conferences, yeah, or to go to ed camps or Coffee EDU, and those kinds of things spring up for exactly that reason, is we have the experience within the teachers and we have the people wanting to try new things. It's just the district and school can't afford to bring them out. So let's just go to them.
Yeah. We're having to be way more creative with how we, yeah, how we learn these new things. And I've got an amazing staff, and I have so many of my teachers are willing to do that. Or we'll go to ed camps. We'll go to local things. We'll get on Pinterest. We'll get on Teachers Pay. They will take the time outside of their contractual hours to better themselves and then come back and share it with their colleagues, which is awesome. But again, there's no magic wand magic money wand to wave at this problem. It's just one of those things right now that oftentimes it's frustrating because I've got the budget in front of me and there's so much that I would like to do that my assistant principal and I and our leadership team of teachers would love to do, but we've just got to prioritize that because we're we're strapped. And in California, our budget situation has been really bad over the last several years. It got a little better, and it's starting to get a little belt tightening mode again. So,
well, and does it cause a struggle for you as the administrator? Because you don't, I assume, you don't want to encourage your staff to work outside of contractual hours, and yet you also want them to work outside of contractual hours. So how do you manage that yourself?
That's a great question, because it's a very fine line that we have to walk in terms of, if we're being honest, the job cannot be done well within contractual hours. I mean, it just 8:15 to 3:15. It's not possible to do all of the, it's just not possible to do that. And I think that teachers, when they get into the profession, they understand that you're going to have to put, is it fair? No. If there was another, I mean, in any other profession, if you were required, you would be paid for that. And that's just not education. And again, that would be a whole separate. So yeah, I can not require somebody to do something outside of contractual hours. Again, I'm very blessed that I have a staff that understands and recognizes and is willing to, if they see that this is best for kids, they'll do it. And so, yeah, but it is a tightrope at times where we'll see something and be like, wow, guys, check this out. This is fantastic. But it may require a little time outside of the class. So I have to be, I have to be careful because if I'm not, then I'm going to get a call from the union and saying, hey, I hear that you're, and it, so I'm very cognizant of that. And I try to work with our teacher leadership and things like that to be very sensitive, because I know I like to use the analogy of, people say that more and more is being put on teachers' plates, and it's true. Administrators too, but teachers' plates, I like to say it's almost like it's one of those paper plates that is becoming soggy with like all the gravy and stuff that's been mashed potato that's been put on that plate. So I try to be very sensitive to give them another plate to put underneath it or it's like double up the plate so that it's not going to soak through, because I get it. It was not that long that I was in the exact, that I was in that classroom. I was in their seat. So I do, I try to be so conscious of never wanting to come off like I'm in the ivory tower and I don't know what it's like. Now things have changed in the last 6 years, so I'm not going to say that it's exactly the same, because it's not. But anyway, it's
yeah. No, I get it.
It's tricky.
Cool. Well, I guess that kind of leads into mine. What is it that you're doing that you wish all other teachers would do?
Oh, there's a couple things. I already touched on it, and I know that you're a believer in this, so I'm preaching to the choir to you, but the thing that I see is the benefit of Twitter and the amount of professional development that can be obtained via that medium. I got on Twitter in 2009, at the urging of Tony Vincent, who was like my virtual mentor. Are you familiar with Tony's work?
I'm not, actually. I wish I was.
learninginhand.com. He's got just a ton of stuff, but I am now like the Twitter evangelist, so to speak, where I'm going to conferences and leading sessions, and whether it's in my district or in the conference, to try to convince people to give this a shot. Because I think that in my session, it's like there's five reasons that people aren't on Twitter. And number one, it's misperceptions, because people think, well, I'm not 18 years old. They think that you have to be a teenager to be on Twitter. I don't have the latest smartphone, or I'm not a celebrity. They think that you have to be a celebrity. And I try to show them that if you follow the right people, what you can find on Twitter is an absolute goldmine. And I have said it and I will say it again. I'm going into year 22. In 21 years of education, I have learned more from Twitter than 21 years of combined formal professional development. And I've talked with a lot of educators who would say, preach it, Brent. And that is not a shot or a knock on the professional development that I have received, because I've gotten some doggone good PD in the two districts that I've worked in. It's more a testament to how much is out there. And if you're following if you're following Kim Kardashian, you're going to get Kim Kardashian tweets that have nothing to do with education. But if you're following people like Tony Vincent and John Carippo and Weston Kieschnick, and you're following educators who have a passion for sharing their work, it's just a constant stream of goodness. And it's almost, I was driving to work this morning thinking about this, and I thought, it's kind of like you're having to convince somebody to try a new vegetable.
I
don't like vegetables. It's like, hey, no, try this new vegetable. I don't like vegetables. No. Try it. Because if you try it, after like three bites, it's not going to taste like broccoli. It's going to taste like chocolate cake. You just have to trust me and take those three bites. I mean, that's what Twitter is. So to answer your question, I wish more people were taking advantage of that, because like you said, in a budget strapped environment, that is a free on demand way to better our profession. I mean, it's awesome. And I know that you're on there too, and you see the value of it. So like I said, I'm preaching to the choir to you, I believe.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you know, but it's interesting. You talked about, it really comes down to who you follow. And this has been a recent struggle for me in the era of quote unquote fake news and social media bubbles. I wonder if we are actually falling into a similar problem in our Twitter spheres, in that all of the people I'm following are very much like-minded to me. They're on the same page as I am, and that's why I'm following them. They may be ahead of me in the book. You know, they may be three, four pages ahead of me, but we're all heading in the same direction. So at what point are we not doing any more good until we get all of those other people to come on with us and keep bringing people into where we're at? And I don't know. I feel like at some point we hit a parity where the people that are going to be willing to try it are already there, and that's pretty much it. So, but like you said, it comes down to who you follow, and do we need to be increasing that sphere of who we're following, or how do we continue to learn from Twitter? Because I feel like sometimes maybe I've learned what I can learn for now.
Yeah, that's a great point, because it is all about who you follow. If you follow the same group of people, you're going to get the same type of information. And I am frequently adding followers to my list, but I am strategic in terms of who I follow, because I'm not interested in following celebrities. I'm not interested in following people who tweet about their cats. and that's not, well, you hate cats, Brent? No, I don't hate cats. Well, I am allergic to cats, but that's
I actually do hate cats. Yeah, I hate cats, actually. Yes. I will go out on the record and say cats are awful.
Yeah, they're not my favorite pet because I'm allergic. But my point is, I would not want anyone to be offended by that, because it's like, that's not what I use the tool for. I use the tool to gain information, to be challenged. And some of the people that I follow, to your point, we're not 100% in agreement on everything that we do. But I think, to your point again, it's healthy for me sometimes to follow those people, because I'm challenged. They will tweet something, a blog post or an article or something like that, where that will require me to oh, geez, I didn't think of it like that, or I've never thought of it through that lens before. So, more than anything, I just think if people would get on and try it, and follow some people and then kind of let it organically grow, it's better than sitting on the couch and doing nothing. That's, I mean, if I'm sitting in the line at the DMV and everyone's going to pull out their phone, well, I might as well pull out my phone and learn something.
Yeah.
So
I think that's such a critical point to think about, though, is that you're sitting there on your phone anyways. Why not do something that's going to be good for you instead of playing a game or whatever? And I definitely am guilty of both. So I play plenty of stupid games on my phone, but I agree with you. It's like, it's why not use that time more wisely in a sense?
Well, and not just for lurking. And I know that you mentioned, so you know what I mean by that. People are like, whoa, not stalker lurking, but a lot of people, like 60% of the people on Twitter don't tweet. They just lurk. They're just, and that's great. That's a great starting place. But I like to say, share what you have, because there's such good things going on in, I'll just use my school, for example, in your school, there's such good things going on there that needs to be shared. Because I always like to say, somebody in the world right now is online Googling for what you have. So if we stop and think about that with the billions of people on this planet, somebody's online right now doing a Google search for something that a teacher has. It might be a encouraging thought. It might be an instructional practice. It might be a graphic. It might be anything. But Twitter and podcasts like this make it so much easier to share that kind of stuff. Literally a couple taps of the phone, boom, you're done.
And I think another point that I always think about when I try to talk about Twitter and especially podcasting and blogging and things like that, being the creator side of it, is that metacognition we expect of our students, right?
Yeah.
Like, we want our students to think about what they've learned, to articulate what they've learned and put it out there. And we typically ask them to give it to us, which is a whole different philosophical discussion we can have of if that's beneficial or not. But as teachers, I get so much power from participating and actually presenting information and writing blog posts and doing this podcast, because it makes me think about my practice and why I do the things the way I do and why they were successful or weren't successful. So on the other end of it is, not only is it important to be there, but participating is critical too.
Listeners would think that we scripted this, but we didn't. This is totally organic, but you just segued into like one of the second things that I would love to see more, and that's publishing student work. I mean, Rushen Hurley is an educator out here in California who is, you can get him on Twitter at Rushton H. He has said that if students' work is going to be seen by the world, they want it to be good. If it's going to be seen by just the teacher, they want it to be good enough. And that quote has just resonated with me, because it's like, how many times have you heard as a teacher, how many paragraphs does it have to be?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how many sentences does it have to be? And what, basically saying, what's the minimum? What do I have to do? Whereas if students know that their work is going to be seen by the world, they want it to be good. Not just good enough. I mean, when I was in the classroom, I did a student podcast. We called it ColeyCast. And every 3 or 4 weeks, students got in groups and they summarized what they'd learned, whether it was science, social studies, language arts, whatever it was. And they wrote the scripts, they recorded it, and we put it in iTunes on our website for the world to hear. And kids, it was so awesome to see that they were like, can I re-record that? I don't like the way that sounded. Because they wanted it to be good, because they knew that their work was going to be seen and or heard by potentially hundreds, thousands, millions of, I mean, it wasn't millions, but but a lot of people, and they wanted it to be good. And I just think now with things like Seesaw, and I'm at the elementary level, so Class Dojo or Seesaw are apps that make online portfolios, publishing student work, number one, safe, secure. Parents have to log in, so you can kind of work around privacy concerns. And at the upper grades, I mean, middle and high school, you've got websites, whether it's, I mean, WordPress. I mean, there's so many ways for students to publish their work, collaborate with each other. I mean, I would just love to see more and more, and I try to encourage my teachers to publish that work, because, I mean, I've got one of my fifth grade teachers, Natalie, she's got a class Instagram account. She's got a social media intern. Every week, one of her students takes pictures on the class iPad, and the teacher, because of our, they're not 13 yet in fifth grade, she's the one who actually manages the account, but it's the student's job to take pictures and document what they're doing in class. And it was so cool. In one of the last weeks of school, the social media intern was going around the classroom saying, whose work is good enough to share? Who thinks their work is good enough for me to take a picture of? And kids are like clamoring to have him take a picture of their work. But just that mindset, whose work is good enough? They want to make sure that it's good enough. They don't want to put their garbage up, their halfway effort for the world to see. They want their best work to be up there. So
that's cool. I really like that. You know, and it was actually a recurring theme at ISTE this year. And they had a series of student presenters on Ignite sessions where students gave 5-minute presentations through Ignite. And many of them had this same vein and this same concept of, you know, we don't want to do a worksheet to hand to our teacher. That does nothing for me personally. Like, they're not engaged. They're not interested in that, because who cares? Because at home, they can reach the entire world. And now you want me to just do something for you? That's not worth my effort. Like, they're smart enough to recognize that. And yet our teachers are sometimes hesitant to take that on and fix that problem. So, and I will say, kind of like I said, there are some other issues to be worked around. So, I mean, you have to be careful. And, you know, I know in my district, we encourage students to use social media for class purposes. But in terms of a teacher posting pictures of a student, that's a kind of a big no-no, even if it's a, you know, school account or district account or whatever. So it is, there's still a lot of hesitance on in terms of the privacy components that really need to be worked out. And students don't have those concerns, but teachers and administrators and political people certainly do.
No, and I absolutely agree. And there are definitely those things have to be considered. That my teacher, she came to me before she did anything, and we sat down. Hey, this is my idea. What do you think? And we talked about all those things, and there are release forms that she had them sign in terms of their work, and we typically shy away from student faces. Mm-hmm. So it may be the work that that's a picture of, like, or something like that, and it's not necessarily the student, it's maybe their artwork or something like that that it would not be recognizable or attributed to a certain kiddo to respect those privacy concerns that some of the parents have. Because I get that. I used to, when I had my classroom website and I published student work, I had a release form and that I talked with my parents about and said, hey, I understand if you're, I mean, I want to respect this. And so, but yeah, that's definitely a concern that has to be considered, because as you had mentioned earlier, I mean, you don't want to put yourself in legal hot water.
Yeah, no, not so much. So
no.
Awesome. Well, let's move to my favorite question as always. And who is the favorite teacher you've already had? I know you said before we recorded that you have done a podcast episode on this. So you probably have an answer for me, but
I do. I've got a lot of teachers that I really looked up to. I had a high school teacher, government and economics, Mrs. Godfrey. I mean, she was awesome. Even at the age of 17 or 18 years old, I loved her because she was so knowledgeable. She was so prepared. I never remember her looking at notes. She probably was, but I don't remember that. And every time somebody asked her a question, she knew the answer. And this was pre-Google. I mean, she wasn't looking at, hey, Siri, what's the answer to this kid? There wasn't any of that. She knew her stuff. And I remember that made it such a big impression on me. even at the young age of 17 or 18, I recognized, wow, my teacher is prepared and she's not winging it up there. But what I would say is one of the best teachers that I've ever had was in my master's program. She was also one of my professors in my credential program. Andrea Guillaume was so great. And what made her great was she made the effort to communicate to students that she actually cared about them. And she taught some of our core courses in the credential program. But what, like, the perfect story to go along with that, because I like to tell stories, hence the podcast, is the very first class of my master's program. It was an educational statistics class. I don't know about you, but do you enjoy statistics?
If I had to pick a favorite branch of math, that would probably be up there, but math is the worst. So generally, yeah. No.
Statistics, not the most exciting. I mean, p-values and all. It's not the most exciting content. But she, number one, she made it exciting, but as exciting as statistics could be. But more than that, she was the type of teacher that cared about her students and made her students care about her. She was the type of teacher that I'm sure if you were asked to think about, if I asked you the question right now, think about a teacher that you didn't want to let down. You could probably come up with that. And that was, Andrea was that teacher for me because she worked hard, she cared about us, and I didn't want to let her down. I was a good student, but I was not the best student in the world. In that statistics class, going into the final, I had missed, if I recall correctly, 1.5 points the entire semester. And wow. I say that, disclaimer, I say that not as, wow, Brent, well, you must have been a great student. Uh-uh. I was not a great student. She was a great teacher who enabled me to do that. But more, it wasn't just that I only missed 1.5 points. The final was optional. She said, if you've got already got your A, you don't have to take the final. Now, only missing 1.5 points, I did not have to take the final. Brad, do you think I took the final?
I'm guessing you took the final, yeah.
You darn right I took that final. Because if I didn't take the final, in my mind, the message that I would have let her down. I would have taken the easy way out. Now, to be transparent, I had another master's class where the final was optional, and I didn't take that final because I already had the grade that I needed, and I was okay because the teacher. Sounds kind of bad, but she hadn't established a relationship where I cared enough. This is going to sound bad, but we're being honest here, where I cared enough that I didn't care if I felt like I was letting her down. Does that make sense? I mean,
no, especially in a college atmosphere and a master's program atmosphere, that's not uncommon. I mean, maybe in master's program, not as much, but I went to the University of Central Florida. There's like an absurd number of students there. Most of my professors wouldn't know my name if I stood up in front of them and told it to them. So when you talk about a college professor doing that kind of work and caring that much, I mean, I think that, you know, Andrea is the exception, not the other professor for sure.
Yeah, no, she's the one that stands out because I didn't want to let her down. And I think that, like, and I believe I've shared that story with my teachers. And if I haven't, I'm going to make a note to myself that this would be like my encouragement to my staff as we get ready to embark on another school year is kids will not remember everything that you teach them. In terms of content, but if you can be the kind of teacher that loves your kids, especially at the elementary level, but at all levels, but where we are, if you love your kids and you establish a relationship and they know that you will do anything for them, they will they will run through a brick wall for you. They will walk through fire for you because they won't want to let you down. So yeah, content's important, but gosh, it starts with the relationships. And if you can build that, they'll do anything for you. And if they'll do anything for you, it is limitless to how far learning can go.
Well, it's interesting because you're saying this and I'm thinking through my favorite teachers and like, what did I, you know, and while it may not have been the reason I realized I loved them or they're my favorite teachers, what I remember, I distinctly remember moments where I let them down and where I didn't do the best I was capable of. And those are the moments that are not my favorite moments with that teacher, obviously, but they're moments that I remember because I did let them down. And I, you better believe I didn't do that again.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's interesting the way you put that. I really like that.
Yeah. It's, that's what we remember. Yeah. And sometimes those, like you said, you remember the time, like the less than good feeling time, but it made an impact on you. And you, like you said, I didn't do that again. Hmm. So.
Very cool. Wow. I want to meet this Andrea lady. She sounds super awesome.
She is.
So, you know, Brent, I really appreciate you talking to me today. I'm trying to decide where I want to go with this. You've given me so much to think about. You know, I love where you talked about funding and thinking about how we're struggling. And I don't know that we have a solution to that, but the, what is interesting to me is that your thing you do that you wish other people would do, that Twitter comment is directly related to that. You know, it's that follow up of we don't have the funding. And so the only other option is for us to do it on our own.
Yeah.
You know, and I love that connection there. I really do. And I would encourage my audience, and I have, I'm sure, but if I haven't, I encourage my audience to get involved on Twitter, join the teacher communities. There's so many of them. I always say start with a chat, you know, find a Twitter chat that works for you. Mm-hmm. You know, Tuesday night's Ed Chat is always a great starting point. My last guest, Mandy Taylor, she talked about the personalized PD chat on Tuesday nights as well. So, I mean, there's so many of them out there. I feel like you could literally just spend a life on Twitter doing Twitter chats. I don't know how much you do of those, but they're great.
California has a CA Ed Chat every mm-hmm. Sunday night at 8 p.m. Pacific time. And there's a different theme every week. And they post the questions in advance. And again, even if you're not contributing, just to sit there and watch the comments come through, gosh, it's so encouraging. So, and oftentimes challenging in a good way, because that's how you grow.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and I obviously I echo the publishing student work. I mean, I critically echo that. I mean, that's absolutely essential that we get beyond the four walls of our classroom in so many ways. Because that is going to be an absolutely essential life skill for our students when they get into the future. You know, I mean, and I often joke, we live in the future, but they're going to live in the even futury future. You know, and that's that lifelong connection and that connected portion is going to be critical for our students.
Oh, it absolutely is. I mean, like just on a personal level, I've got a 12-year-old and a 16-year-old, son and daughter. I've already purchased domain names for them because I've got my own domain. I've got BrentColley.com, but I recognize that, you know what, when they get older and they move into their professions, I mean, my daughter wants to be a writer. Well, she's going to need her own website. Mm-hmm. she's going to want to publish her work. So it's like, okay, they're not using it yet, but I wanted to secure the rights to those domain names because it's not an option anymore for, you got to have an online presence. I mean,
absolutely.
It's just the way it is.
Yeah. Cool. Well, you know, Brent, I really appreciate you sitting with me. I think it's been a great discussion. We cover a lot of ground, but I really appreciate you taking the time to sit with me and record this with me. I appreciate it.
Oh, this was a blast. Thank you, Brad. I was encouraged and inspired by chatting with you. So thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Again, thanks for being with me. And I think we're good here. So I'll talk to you later. All right.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks.
All right. Bye.
awesome time talking to Brent. I hope you all enjoyed it as well. If you'd like to connect with him, check out his Twitter. He's at Brent Coley, or his website, brentcoley.com. And of course, check out his podcast, Teaching Tales, available on any podcatching app. As always, if you like what you've heard, do me a favor and give me a review on iTunes. It is the best way that you can help out the show. Head over to tinyurl.com/planningperiodreview, and you're right where you need to be. You can also connect with me on Twitter. I'm at Brad Scheffler. I always love to hear from you. That's also a great place to connect if you'd like to be a guest on the show. Until next week, remember, somebody in the world right now is online Googling what you have. So share your voice. Music for this podcast is provided by Kevin MacLeod and is the song Vicious, licensed under Creative Commons. This show is also a proud member of the VoiceEd Radio Network, a 24-hour radio network all about education all the time. Your voice belongs here.